And joining me on the phone now, I have the leader of Ireland's newest political party, Identity Ireland. Good afternoon, Peter. Welcome to Near FM. How are you?
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. I should have just said your name is Peter O'Loughlin. I was that keen to give you the big introduction. I forgot to say your name was Peter O'Loughlin. I just said Peter. Sorry about that. Peter, you launched last week Identity Ireland. Could you give us maybe a little overview of the party and what you stand for?
Yeah, we're a pro-sovereignty party. We believe that the Irish nation should be run in the interest of the Irish people, and we believe that we should control, we should basically be in control of our own country. So in terms of our own natural resources, our money, our borders, and that we should be looking towards looking after ourselves as opposed to allowing our sovereignty to be taken away and to be dominated by unelected bureaucrats, and to kind of re-establish ourselves as a free nation and hopefully to be able to create a better society for us and ourselves.
Yeah, it's interesting to say, just looking through your website there's kind of four main strands. Does Europe, the economy, does immigration, and there's law and order. If I could kind of go through them sort of one at a time, you know, people would probably argue that, you know, without Europe we'd be absolutely floundering out here on the western tip of Europe, the forgotten little island out there in the Atlantic, floating away with nobody supporting us, no means of sustaining ourselves. What would you say to people who believe that?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's an element of truth insofar as we didn't exactly cover ourselves with glory throughout the 20th century. Our governments never really managed to get a handle on building up our economy. We did have heavy levels of emigration. And to be honest, the original EEC, which we joined, the European Economic Community, was a good thing for Ireland. But unfortunately, that old European community is pretty much dead now. Now we're talking about the European Union. It's a different entity. And, you know, after the likes of the Lisbon Treaty and the Nice Treaty, Europe moved away from being cooperative to being autocratic. And you see, we're not just about, yes, we do want to be out of the European Union, but what we advocate for is to go back to a model like the European Community, which is a cooperative model of nation states. And the problem is, of course, once you give away your power to autocrats and in the way that we have, you suddenly find yourself in a very difficult situation because you can't hold them to account. You've lost all control, and therefore you're at their mercy. And as we've seen recently with the situation in Greece, for example, the Greeks have found out in a very tough way, and they're in an awfully tough situation, that when push comes to shove, small countries just don't matter in the Union. And if small countries have to be sacrificed for the health of the bigger nations, then the bigger nations will act in their own interest, which, you know, is their right, but you can't have a union operating in that manner. With a union, you either have to work together or not. And for us, for whether it's Ireland or whether it's Portugal or whether it's Greece, we've found now that we're nothing more than provinces, and that especially over the last 15 years, with the euro, with the likes of the mass immigration policies, that we haven't seen that our needs have been taken care of, and unfortunately we don't have the option to take care of ourselves anymore. Now we simply have to do what we're told.
Well, I suppose ultimately when you talk about Greece, and I mean, Greece was probably marched to the edge of the cliff and given the option to stick or jump, you know, and ultimately they've decided to stick with the European project. And I mean, I'm sure when the Greeks looked into the abyss, they probably realised, you know, what they were looking into, really, really hard times. How would that play itself out in Ireland if we suddenly decided tomorrow, okay, listen, this isn't working for us, lads, thanks for all your help, but we're going to go it alone? How would that work out?
Well, Well, it's difficult to know, I mean, obviously, but it depends on how you handle it, first of all. Now, first of all, the return to the euro. Now, many people say it'll be an absolute disaster. Now, if you remember correctly, we actually switched currency only 15, 16 years ago. Mm-hmm. Now, at the time, nobody was saying we're switching currency is going to be a disaster. They were saying it's the best thing ever. Now, of course, the euro, it was a political tool. It was never designed to be of economic benefit. It was designed to bring the European project together. So the euro was actually, it's never worked. It never can work. It's actually unsustainable insofar as it's going to fail, simply because the countries within the eurozone are too incompatible. Their economies are too different to have the same currency. Now, the example of Greece, as you're saying there, yeah, they were marched to this, but the simple fact is, this isn't the case that Greece suddenly went, well, look, we have two options here. We can leave and get out and return to the drachma, mm-hmm. or we can stay within the union. One is bad, but the other is good. In actual fact, that's not the truth at all, because all they've done is put a sticking plaster on it. Greece will have to either decide to leave voluntarily, or else it's going to crash out eventually. Mm-hmm. Because, as I said, the euro is unsustainable, and it should be kind of, it should, in a perfect world, I suppose, it would be dismantled. But, unfortunately, as I said, the powers that be, this is their project, it's their currency, they're the ones in power, and it doesn't matter, they're willing to sacrifice the peripheral nations and also the bigger nations. You must remember that Italy, Spain and France are also in deep trouble as well. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, for Ireland, as you're asking, what would happen with Ireland? Well, look, we will regain control of our country. We regain control of our economic policy. So we get back control of our... We already have control of our fiscal policy, well, to a certain extent. We get back full mm-hmm. control of that, full control of our monetary policy, full control of our resources. And then, yeah, there will be a period of hardship. But it would be shorter... And it would be easier, far, far easier to get out of than an uncontrolled situation where the euro simply breaks apart, everyone's stuck with their head in the sand, and suddenly there's this mass panic, and then you're really, really in trouble. Mm.
But we did have full control of our fiscal policy and everything else mm-hmm. up to about 6 or 7 years ago when we blew it.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, we have full control up until maybe, well, until the euro came in. The euro came in around 1999. That's when we really lost control of monetary policy.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, Ireland, despite the fact that it never covered itself in glory, as I said, it never found itself in a situation where it almost went bankrupt. And we almost went bankrupt in 2007, 2008. And it was only through a massive transfer of wealth mm-hmm. from the people of the country to the banks, which actually stopped this whole thing from falling apart. But unfortunately, that's really only a short-term stopgap, because all they've done really is bought themselves more time. I mean, the system is still massively under pressure. It hasn't been reformed. And a lot of economists, and I would agree, feel that we're actually facing into, like, the recovery has never happened, really. And we're actually facing into more difficulties, which have only actually been compounded. So, again, it's this economic straitjacket, which actually, first of all, helped to nearly crash the economy, the cheap credit, central bank policies, and then of course afterwards, after the Irish people bailed out the banks, then they had to go through massive rounds of austerity,
yeah.
which only depressed the economy further. It's like, as many people say, it's like standing in a bucket and trying to lift yourself up. It's an impossibility. So unfortunately, we're in an economic there's an economic time bomb basically set to go off at some stage right across yeah. Europe, and unfortunately, because we're so tied together, it's going to affect us all, and you're kind of going to see a domino effect. So it's kind of, you have to look to the future, and you have to decide between an option which mightn't be very palatable, but then you have to see that there's a far, far worse option coming up on the horizon. So you have to kind of make an intelligent decision for in the interest of your people, but it's very hard to see that happening, because, like I said, the European Union is very powerful. And unfortunately, yeah. they're dead set yeah. on continuing this project.
Yeah, but many people and will argue, and other government parties obviously will say it. But a lot of the you know, economic indicators are that, you know, we've come through the hard times. We've taken our mm-hmm. medicine. Things are getting better for people. And if that's true, you know, how would as you say, taking a stance of saying, right, we'll go back to the punt, and yeah, it might be hard for a few more years, but ultimately it'll be great. how would you get people on board with that idea? You know, they've been through so much hardship.
To say to them,
tell you what, lads, do another 10 years of hardship under the punt where our exports would be, you know, the cost of our exports and imports would go through the roof or whatever. And, you know, how do you get people on board with that? Because people have been through such a hard time.
Understandable. I mean, first of all, you have to think about the figures which are being put forward by the government. As years go by, they're including more and more things into GDP to kind of boost the GDP figure, things which shouldn't really be there, things like multinational research costs, certain parts of the black economy. Recently, they put in the aircraft leasing industry, which again wasn't in there before, but makes a nice boost. There's also with the multinationals. Not only are multinationals not paying huge amounts of tax, but their exports are being included in Irish GDP. 50% of our exports now that come out of Ireland are due to multinational companies, and a lot of economists question the actual value of those to the Irish economy itself and the contribution that makes to the state. And also on top of that, we actually run profits from multinational companies which aren't even in Ireland, through Ireland, and then include them in official GDP figures. So we really, really have to take GDP figures with a large pinch of salt. And I mean, I think as far as we can see, Dublin isn't doing too badly, but I can tell you myself, the rest of the country is not doing very well at all. There are certain parts of the country where there is simply no unemployment being created. No employment being created. So we have to be very careful with the official narrative. We must remember it's an election year. We must remember also that we've gone through this hardship, and suddenly, almost as if out of nowhere, suddenly the economy finally took this great turn up, while the rest of Europe isn't seeing that. And you're wondering, okay, so where is this coming from? Is this a real thing? Are our politicians, are our leaders like Enda Kenny, Mike, are they such economic geniuses that they can actually buck the trend right across the world and actually create this recovery where everyone else is suffering? Are they simply pulling the wool over our eyes?
Well, I think people are. I think people are a lot more. Sorry for talking across you. I think people are a lot wiser now. I mean, I think what's probably been hugely interesting about the anti-austerity movement is that people have found themselves, and social media has helped in a huge way with opening people's eyes to a lot of stuff. So I think people are going to go into, say, the next election much more educated than they've ever been going into an election. But I mean, you know, austerity measures, where your stance on them, or would it be assuming, would be to scrap them. How would you do that?
Again, the austerity measures, again, they're part of the fiscal compact treaty which you signed up to. They are coming from Europe. They're being implemented all across Europe. And the thing is, what we kind of need in Ireland, and what we feel, is that Ireland, no matter what you do fiscally, which is like whether you increase taxes, decrease taxes, increase spending, decrease spending, we feel that Ireland just doesn't create enough wealth. And I mean, first of all, when you're dealing with austerity, they should be rolled back. And the reason why is maybe not all of them and not at once, but certainly gradually, because Ireland, we're very reliant on the service industry in Ireland. And of course, the service industry is very reliant on disposable income. And if people can't spend, then it's going to suffer. And these things take time to filter through. If you see now, you know, when Best Man went and Cleary's went, and there was Dunn Stores down in Wexford, which has gone. So these businesses are closing down, but it takes a while for that to filter through. So it might be the austerity measures from, say, 3 years ago, which caused these businesses to struggle, and they tried to keep their head above water, but they couldn't. Eventually, they're forced to close down. So by rolling back these measures, hopefully you can create a better economic environment. But of course, there might be a shortfall in your budgetary position, but sometimes you have to expand that slightly. But we're under such strict rules from Europe, we can't do that. But also, we feel that doing something like taking care of the domestic economy, if we had, say, took back control of our fishing grounds, which are extraordinarily valuable, they are being fished, I think, to the tune of 90% by fishermen from other countries. If you tax them, because they don't pay anything to the Irish government or to the Irish state, tax them, say, roughly 25%, bring in maybe €1 billion a year, that would help offset A lot of austerity policies. Plus, you could use that to invest in something like the sugar industry, which could create proper wealth. I mean, we're talking about domestic wealth, the domestic economy, and real jobs. So, I mean, there are. It's about kind of retooling the economy and going in a different direction. There's nothing easy about it. I mean, there's no quick fix. But as we try and stress, if we're not in control of our economy, then we don't have any options. And then we have no choice but to stay in this really kind of negative economic spiral. So that's kind of where we differ. They say, let others control us and cross our fingers. We say, let us control ourselves. And then we can, it'll depend on how hard we work and, the planning and strategy we put in place.
Yeah. I'm interested, you're at the same that the sugar industry in this country, and we all know that it more or less has vanished in this country. But the thing is that sugar consumption in Ireland is the same as it's been for years. There isn't going to be suddenly a mass increase in sugar consumption in Ireland. So if you reinvigorate that industry, create employment, and you're producing more and everything else, you're going to produce it for foreign market and you're producing it for export. If we're not in Europe and if we're trading under the punt, to export that kind of stuff is going to prove very, very difficult.
Well, a weaker currency, which would be where you then generally, which would be the expected thing which would happen if you return to the punt, generally would boost exports, making them more cheaper, basically, for other countries. We can still trade with Europe, even if we're not in Europe. Britain is in Europe, sorry, it's not in the euro. Norway is not in Europe. Switzerland is not in Europe. But they still trade just as well as we do with the rest. Plus, we trade to other nations, which, of course, aren't in the European Union. With the sugar industry, producing sugar at home, because we don't produce sugar anymore here, so it all has to be imported. Mm-hmm. By producing it here, we're talking about it's clearly going to be cheaper if we can get the correct economies of scale. And, of course, we do produce a very high-quality product, so mm-hmm. that would give us a chance to grab market share off other producers of sugar which mightn't be to the same standards as we are. So again, even if you only came to a situation where, let's say, on the investment side, in the short term, on the investment side, and the amount of money you spend, the amount of money you're taking in, even if you're only roughly breaking even, still the employment boost and then the boost that would give into, say, like if you were to recreate the sugar factory we have somewhere like Mallow or Carlow and the surrounding area, that would be a big boost, not just to those areas, but also to the general taxation, also the drop in social benefits, which you no longer have to pay to the newly employed people. And, the farmers would benefit because they're producing the breed. Obviously, the workers, the truck drivers, the shops in the towns. I stood in the Carlow Kilkenny mm-hmm. by-election recently. I know Carlow well. I grew up there. I grew up actually just within sight of the sugar factory. So I know the difference between Carlow with the sugar factory and Carlow without it, and it's a very different place.
Yeah. Well, it would be interesting to see under all those models how that would work. But I want to kind of come on to you, I suppose, which is is your policy that's probably caused the most controversy since you lost last week, is your immigration stance. Return to full border control from the European Union. What do you mean by full border control?
Well, full border control is that we're basically 100% in control of our own border policy. That's pretty much it. I mean, once you have full border control, you decide what kind of system you want. I think systems like the Canadian or the Australian system, visa systems, which Irish people have to go through the mm-hmm. whole time if they're emigrating to these countries, would suit quite well. It seems to work quite well. So it just means, again, return of sovereignty. So we're in control of something instead of people who we don't elect being in control of these things.
And because the EU recently debated the situation in the Mediterranean and putting together a plan for helping these immigrants who are literally dying on boats or trying to swim from Northern Africa to Europe to escape, whether it be poverty, oppression, tyranny, whatever. Under your proposals, would you see Ireland playing any part in that, or would you let the EU go and say, okay, that's your problem and we don't want anything to do with that?
Well, I think in this scenario, you have to look at, first of all, the situation which has arisen in the Mediterranean. There's really two aspects to that. There's obviously the huge destabilization in the Middle East and the terrible impact of the civil war in Syria and the terrible growth of ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other hand, there's massive economic migration from kind of sub-Saharan Africa, which is having quite a big population explosion. And it's kind of these two which are moving up. I think the first thing you have to do is define between economic migrants and refugees,
mm-hmm.
Which should be done on the North African coast, as far as we're concerned. And the thing is, Europe can only take so much. And this is a simple fact, you know. It's not that people don't want to help other people. It's simply like you have limited resources. And that's simply a fact of life. So you have to make decisions based on that. So we would say, for example, with the Etna down in the Etna, I think she's been replaced by the Ymir.
The Etna, yeah.
In the Mediterranean, that, yeah, if people are rescued, obviously you rescue people, certainly, but then you should deposit people back to the point of departure, because, you know, Australia had this problem. They took what would be, some people might see as a tough line, but you have to think about the fact that once you start bringing people in, like, so if the Ymir is collecting people off the coast of North Africa, bringing them to Italy,
mm-hmm.
And saying, right, that's done, that simply encourages the whole situation, and more people are going to come. The burden is going to become tougher. You're going to see more deaths in the Mediterranean. That's inevitable. We don't have any more ships to send down, for example, so we can't really help out in that regard. And eventually, you're going to have to turn around and say stop at some stage. And far better to do it now than later. And, I mean, this is kind of, with mass immigration in general, at some stage you have to say stop, because you can't simply keep importing people into a nation, because nations, again, they have limited resources. We live in a country, for example, where 700 people are homeless, in Dublin alone. We clearly don't have the resources to take care of Irish people in this country, regardless of what the government say about the improving economic situation. So, I mean, you have to make decisions based on that. Irish people do need to come first in their own country. That's the job of the government. It is our home to look after our own people. And then I think in regards to refugees, take them if you can afford it. Yes, I do think you should try and help out as much as possible, because it is a very, very terrible situation for these people. Mm. I do think if refugees were resettled in Ireland, I think they should then be resettled back in their home country once the civil war is over.
Yeah.
But I do think only if you can't look after your own people first, because as I said, we have limited resources and we need to use them in the proper manner.
But to be fair, Peter, because I mean, like, Irish people have emigrated all over the world. Literally all over the world. Even if you go back to the times of the famine, where we left this country, millions of us left this country to escape starvation. And I know we're going back 150, 200 years, but if the attitude that you're putting forward there was prevalent in the Americas, when all of these famine ships arrived, or in Australia, and they are now just send them back, we would have been. The Irish people would have been the ones drowning in the Mediterranean, if you know what I mean. You know, so I mean, we've been the immigrants, and maybe it's time for us to kind of turn the other cheek and now and say, look, you know, many nations opened their arms to us. Maybe we should open their arms to others in need now.
Well, the thing is, I mean, America and Australia both at the time were very underpopulated countries. They were colonial countries as far as they were still colonizing the land which was available to them at the time, and in order to do that, they welcomed immigrants from all over the world, from Ireland, Britain, Germany, everywhere, because they wanted them to come, because they wanted them to help colonize. And of course, that wasn't much good for the Native Americans who were there. I'm mm-hmm. sure they were far preferred if the colonists had stayed at home. I take your point about the Irish famine, and we were fortunate, I think, in that regard, that we had a chance to go somewhere. But to look at Ireland today, Ireland is a small country. As I said, we have limited resources. It's a highly irresponsible thing to flood a nation in a manner. If you know, instead of having border controls where you decide how many people you want to take in, instead of just leaving the borders open and allowing people simply to move in without any restriction. And second thing of all, to most of the countries, especially in the modern day, the countries that Irish people have emigrated to have border controls. So Irish people want to emigrate to Australia, they have to go through a border control system. They want to emigrate to Canada, they have to go through a border control system. And I think Ireland is entitled to have the same type of system, because, again, it's not simply that Irish people just say, look, I want to live in Australia or I want to live in Canada. The Australians and the Canadians have to, or the Canadians have to decide to let you in. And that's the type of power we don't have.
Yeah, but it is true down the years that, Peter, and unfortunately I'm going to have to win because we're running right out of time, but it is true that many, many millions of Irish people have been illegal in all of these countries. But listen, Peter, I really have to win because I'm absolutely 100% out of time. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk.